Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham, who are both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. This week on the podcast, we are joined by John Stevens, who is the National Director of the FIEC. Graham and Mark chat with John about the purpose of the FIEC, the benefits for ordinary church members and churches as a whole, as well as a discussion about the state of the evangelical church in the UK in general at this time. So let's get into the podcast. I'll catch you on the other side.
I'm Mark Ventham.
And I'm Graham Nichols, and this is Ordinary, and we are excited again, not just to be doing a podcast, but also that we've got another special guest.
Very special guest.
And who is the special guest, Mark?
A special guest, John Stevens.
And who is John Stevens?
Well, National Director of the FIEC, which stands for?
The Fellowship of Independent Evangelical Churches, I believe.
That was your first
test,
you passed.
Yeah. So, John, tell us just a little bit about yourself, how you got to be director of the FIEC and kind of where you're living now, what you do.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me onto the podcast. I've been the National Director of the FIEC for about 9 years. Prior to that, I was pastor of a church in central Birmingham called City Church that I planted back in 1999 with a couple of other friends. I was converted when I was a student at university, had a career teaching law in universities for about 16 years while helping to lead local churches and work bivocationally.
So the FIEC, it's a network of churches, I think about 600. I suppose a question that some of our listeners might ask, they would say, well, we're just ordinary Christians. We belong to churches. We're trying to serve Jesus in our lives. We understand the local church. You know, we hope that they understand the importance of the local church and connecting with that. What's the sort of, what's the point of the FIEC for the ordinary church member?
Well, the FIEC has been around for almost 100 years. It's its 100th anniversary in 2022. And the vision of FIEC from the very beginning was to seek to support and encourage the work of local churches. Because we're committed to independency and we believe that each local church ought to be autonomous and self-governing, the FIEC doesn't control local churches. Our role is simply really to support and encourage independent churches in their ministries. So I wouldn't expect FIEC to be prominent in the life of local churches. We wouldn't want it to be. It's all about helping local churches to be effective in proclaiming the gospel in their community. So in many ways, our vision is wanting to support the work of local churches. We want to encourage our churches also to work together and support one another. Perhaps rather quaintly, the FIEC, when it was first founded, was described as a society of mutual helpfulness. And that's actually really the goal of FIEC, is that independent churches can support one another so they can be healthy and effective in their gospel ministries. Our strapline today is independent churches working together to reach Britain for Christ. We want each individual local church to be healthy, but we want them to be serving the greater cause of the gospel in the nation. And over the last 9 years, we've had more than 180 churches join FIEC. They've joined because of the vision that we have. And they often give three reasons for why they've joined. They want to be part of a network of like-minded gospel churches that share their core biblical convictions. So they want to stand together with those who hold to historic evangelical truths. Secondly, they want to work together in mission. They recognize the great need to reach the nation with the gospel, and they want to be part of a group that enables them to have that national gospel perspective. And then lastly, the third thing they want is the advantages of the practical support and help that we're able to give to local churches.
And we're, Christ Church is a member of the FIEC, and we love being part of that and benefit from all you guys doing, supporting us in that and in that national outreach.
And the Leaders' Conference.
And the Leaders' Conference. We love the Leaders' Conference.
Which is coming up in the autumn.
one of the things, I guess, John, that you have a unique perspective on is the state of the church in the UK in terms of, obviously, there are, nearly 600 churches across the UK as part of it, but you're engaged in lots of other networks as well. I mean, how would you describe the state of the church in the UK today?
Well, you're absolutely right. One of the privileges of my job is not only to engage with the 630-odd FIEC churches, but actually more widely with British evangelicalism, with a variety of different evangelical kind of groupings and denominations. So that has given me an opportunity to meet lots of leaders and engage with lots of churches. I think across the UK as a whole at the moment, the church situation is very mixed. So there is spectacular and rapid decline across many of the historic denominations, which have largely abandoned the gospel and have adopted a kind of a liberal perspective and have bought into the kind of liberal progressive agenda. So the church as a whole across the UK is in rapid freefall decline. Congregations are aging and shrinking. So groupings like the Anglican Church overall, the Methodists, the United Reformed Church, the Catholic Church are in rapid decline. And I think in that sense, the church and Christianity as a whole is being pushed to the margins within British society. So that's one part of the overall picture. And that's probably the main perspective that the media gives on Christianity in the UK. The other part of the picture is that evangelical churches, churches which have held firm to the biblical gospel, are generally growing slowly. So against that background of spectacular decline of many of the main denominations, evangelical churches are slowly growing. So there's a completely different story there about the evangelical church. Churches are being planted. Some churches are being revitalized. So there is a gospel growth. There's been an influx of a large number of evangelical Christians from around the world. There's a very vibrant and thriving black and ethnic church scene in the UK today. So the picture is very different when you look at the evangelical churches. Now, overall, they're no more than about 3% of the British population. But year on year, they are slowly growing, we guess by about 1% per year. Perhaps another feature, though, within the evangelical section is the pressure that's coming on churches over issues like homosexuality, the changed sort of values of our culture. And so within evangelicalism, there's also a challenge with some of the churches as to whether they're going to continue to stand firm for historic biblical teaching on sexuality, or whether they're going to instead adopt the agenda of the culture. So I really see those three things going on. Churches that have abandoned the gospel are in rapid decline. Churches that have remained faithful to the gospel are seeing slow, steady growth. And within those churches, some are under pressure and are capitulating to the culture and abandoning historic biblical teaching on marriage and sexuality.
I think that's really not in a kind of looking down on people's sense, but I think understanding that the churches that are not teaching the Bible are generally declining is encouraging thing to hear, because sometimes when we hear kind of in the media, particularly churches that we just think are not teaching the Bible, you know, church leaders that are not teaching the Bible, we kind of think perhaps that is the state of Christianity, and that you know, we're in our sort of small part of the vineyard, some little corner, we're not kind of sure where we fit. So I think it is encouraging to have a national picture that, as we would expect, when the church becomes indistinct and doesn't preach the gospel, it has really nothing much to offer. So although those churches perhaps have a bit more prominence in the media, they're not actually thriving, generally speaking.
I think that's exactly right. And I think for many of those churches, they're being sustained by historic money. They are declining in terms of the numbers of congregation that actually attend. They are, in a sense, seeing that the people who have been involved and have attended are less committed. So what we're seeing is the disappearance of folk religion across the UK as a whole. And actually, I think that is to the advantage of the gospel, because in the end, the witness of evangelical churches in the culture is becoming clearer as other churches sort of decline.
Hmm. I mean, that would have been our experience in Haywards Heath, that we've grown for the last 20 years, really, but incrementally, relatively small, but, you know, growing by a few percent each year. So we've had really good years where it's been more than that, but generally speaking, that sort of growth. But we're not in sort of terminal decline. You know, we're twice as big as we were 20 years ago. So there is growth going on. But as you say, we're probably typical. We kind of think perhaps we're atypical, but I think we probably are typical from what you say.
I think it seems to me I've been a Christian for almost 30 years. And I think I would say that from my perspective, the evangelical church, the gospel-based evangelical church, is in a healthier state than I think it's been in the 30 years that I've been a Christian. It seems to me there is more growth, there is more confidence in the gospel, there is more unity between gospel Christians than there was 30 years ago. Some of the battles that divided the church in the past have been overcome. Fights over issues like music, worship, charismatic gifts seem to be much less relevant as we all recognise the missional context in which we're working. And I think for many faithful evangelical churches, they don't see very rapid growth. And they assume that maybe in comparison with the church in past generations, or they assume that maybe churches in other places are growing more rapidly and more quickly. And I think for many of them, they need the encouragement of knowing that what they're experiencing is normal for the vast majority of churches in the UK. I engage with a large variety of networks, and I can say that none of them are reporting rapid growth, large numbers of conversions. It is slow, steady growth on a year-by-year basis. Still lots of remarkable accounts of people coming to know Christ. Great stories across the country of, for example, Iranians and asylum seekers and refugees coming to know Christ, but nobody is seeing very rapid growth. And I think we need to understand that that's just the cultural context in which we're living in at the moment.
Thinking about us ordinary Christians seeking to live for Christ, what is the cultural context in the sense of, is it Christian, non-Christian? Is it neutral? I know we'd say theologically that might not be possible, but you know, what is the cultural water in which we're swimming? How would you describe it, and what's the implications of that?
I think the cultural water in which we're swimming is we're living in a post-Christian context primarily. I think within that post-Christian context, you have some who are aggressively secularist, some who are aggressively atheist, And some amongst the elites who would hold that view, and that shapes some of the public discourse. However, I think for the vast majority of the population, their post-Christian context is one of ignorance and apathy. And I think the reality for many Christians as they seek to engage with their neighbours, their friends, their colleagues, it's not that they're encountering sharp hostility towards Christianity. They are just constantly running up against a total apathy and disinterest, and a cultural assumption that Christianity has nothing to offer, that it has been tried in the past and failed and society has moved on from it. So I think actually battling against the apathy and ignorance of the vast majority of the population is the reality for most ordinary Christians.
Yeah, I think that's really
Although the public voices are kind of very negative and aggressively secular.
Yeah, I think it's helpful because perhaps for most of us who are just kind of sampling the media a bit, or maybe sampling someone else who's sampling the media, we think it's all about the aggressive secularists and that kind of agenda. And we think that's the kind of main battle line. But I think probably you're right, not probably you're right, you're right in our experience, in that most people we encounter in evangelism are not particularly hostile in the areas that we'd expect. They're mostly apathetic. I think there's a kind of exception to do with the moral agenda, where sometimes that can excite from a sort of 0 to 100% reaction, just because of the way culture has framed the narrative of if you have a different view about sexuality and marriage and gender, then you're a bad person. So I think that is a genuine problem. But I think apart from that issue, I think on the sort of place of Christianity generally, I think you're absolutely right that it's apathy and ignorance that's the problem rather than a really well worked out hostility.
So as well as leading the FIC, I kind of, I also lead a small local church called Christchurch Market Harbour, and I think that would be very much our experience on the ground. We find amongst our neighbours and people that we're engaging with, maybe you have an opportunity to tell them about the gospel, speak about church. But when you've done that, sort of many of them just manage to avoid any opportunity to speak about it again. It's just a polite ignoring of this area of your life. And you try to engage with your neighbours and share with them and be interested in them. But it's almost as though they just, in a very British, polite way, manage to be able to avoid ever having further conversations about church and the gospel. They think it's a little bit strange. They think it's got nothing to offer them. And they're fearful. They know enough to know that if you're an evangelical, you are interested in seeking to see other people converted, and that therefore they just find ways of not engaging with you.
And yet, John, I mean, we're talking earlier, you know, the church in terms of evangelism is as healthy as it has been on one level. And yet we're seeing the apathy and ignorance, and yet there is such need, increasing need within our country. Why are we not connecting those two things up better? You know,
do you mean need in terms of people, loss of community, loss of sense of identity, dignity, purpose, hope?
Wrestling with
for example,
all of those exactly, all of those issues of life. Yeah. You know, the mess of life, full stop, is seemingly at times just getting harder for folks. Yet we have the best news to share, and somehow we're not connecting those. So we've got a healthy church, and yet we're not impacting the community. So we're seeing the odd trickle of people converted. You know, is the apathy, the ignorance just that hard, or are we just not connecting in ways that are meaningful or right? Or does that make sense?
I think that's an absolutely huge question. I think the starting point has got to be, we can have a tendency to think that in the past, as I said, the church is, I think, healthier now than I saw it 30 years ago. I think we can have a tendency to think the church in the past was healthy because there were larger numbers, more cultural power, more significance. I think at that point, the church was often very unhealthy because it wasn't actually necessarily preaching the gospel. And many people have been put off Christianity by the failures of the church, by the cultural power that it exercised, by the emptiness of the message that it proclaimed. And one of the challenges of a post-Christian context is that people are apathetic, but they're apathetic because they've got some residual memory of a Christianity that didn't work. And I think certainly amongst sort of people who are maybe over 40, that's still a background against which we're kind of ministering. So it's not just that they're apathetic, but there's an underlying negativity towards Christianity that comes from previous experience. So I do think it is a battle to overcome that. Culturally, more generally, it's also that on a worldwide basis, the narrative is that religion is damaging. It's damaging to social cohesion. It's intolerant and bigoted. And that's part of the cultural environment in which we're operating. Having said that, you're absolutely right. There's massive need that needs to be met, and there's great opportunity for the gospel. And I would say that the growth that evangelical churches are seeing compared to the wider decline of Christianity is precisely because many churches are making huge efforts to engage with their communities, to connect with people, to serve the local community. So I see all around the country churches running, say, mums and toddlers groups that are packed with people coming in. There's a real need to provide for people in that way, and that's a way of engaging with the community. Similarly, many churches that have got involved in CAP projects and attempts to minister to those who are struggling with issues of debt, food banks, and picking up on some of the consequences of austerity and the inability of the state to provide. So I see a lot of that work going on in churches, probably more again than I've seen in the last 30 years. I think that the background and the environment in which we're in is that despite all of those efforts, evangelism just seems to take a very long time, and the fruit from all of that work is slow to come forwards. So I think you're right. I think there's great opportunity, but I think the church has got to work really hard to both build the connections and establish its credibility. I love talking in churches to people on the door and asking how they became Christians. And again, many people tell a very similar story, that what caused them to become a Christian was that they got to know a Christian personally. They saw something different in that person's life. That person shared their faith in Jesus with them. Often they invited them along to church or an event, and they went reluctantly. But actually, when they went and they came into the church community, they discovered something that was not at all what they expected. They'd sort of got a false impression of what the church might be like, and they came into the community and they saw something of the love that Christians have for one another. They were kind of engaged by the message that was being proclaimed, and then they found themselves coming back. And then after a period of time, they began to realize that they believed the message that they were hearing. And I could repeat that story time and time again.
I mean, I think the relational evangelism, we're constantly encouraging people in that. I think it's complicated because, well, not even complicated, it's challenging because people are very busy, and actually good evangelical family-based churches create a culture that's so nice to be in that it's very tempting just to stay in it. So without guilting people, kind of encouraging people to break out in terms of their relationships is a constant challenge, you know, because it's nice being with church friends and it's nice being in church, and you learn and develop your relationship with God and with God's people, and that is a good experience and one to validate, but and to encourage. But it's getting people to break out of that. So those stories that you're hearing on the door of people becoming Christians, you know, we want lots of them. And I think our church is probably also typical in that there are relatively few people who are constantly relating to people who are non-Christians, befriending them, genuinely getting to know them, inviting them to things, going in for the long haul. There's relatively few. And, you know, and if our church is listening, I'm not trying to criticize our church, but, you know, there's relatively few considering the church of 160. I don't know if that's true across churches generally.
I think that's true across a lot of churches. And I think that's actually part of a broader picture that once people have got beyond the student and young person stage, actually they find it more difficult to make new friendships. Mm. And I think sometimes it's actually quite hard for Christians to break into those friendships. Again, I would think about our experience in Market Harborough, having moved into the town. You would have thought you could form friendships, but actually lots of people have already got their friendship group, they've already got their activities that they're involved in, and they don't actually have a social need for more friends. And I think actually it's quite difficult sometimes for Christians to break in. I've noticed that for many Christians, their primary evangelistic opportunity is in the workplace, which is where they're kind of rubbing up against clients and colleagues. One of the challenges for many Christians is their workplace is not connected to the place that they live. So the primary place they're doing evangelism is actually not in the local community where their church is located. Similarly, I think time and time again that early stage of having children, when couples first have children and they're suddenly in an NCT group or they're going to mums and toddlers events, that's a moment of opportunity of running into people at a stage in life in which they're reconsidering what it's all about, and they've undergone a fundamental change. That's been quite fruitful. I think the early years of primary school, when you have opportunity to build links with sort of the parents of other children, that stage at which parents invite all the kids in the class to the party, and you suddenly have a context and opportunity. So in life, there are some of those moments at which we have real potential to connect with people. But I think building relationships with sort of others in the community who already have established friendship networks is actually quite difficult. And it's one of the limiting factors of friendship evangelism. So I think actually we also need to kind of recover the sort of, in a sense, the form of evangelism that doesn't pre-depend upon a depth of relationship and friendship. So again, I've seen churches that have begun to think a little bit more about door-to-door ministry, about kind of preaching in the open air. Those things that were used in the past perhaps have a little bit more relevance if we want to reach people today.
Yeah, to do with the workplace, just to underline that, I think that's been the case for a long time. I remember when I was working in London and my friends were coming, work friends were coming in from, you know, all around London. So you'd have people from Essex or, you know, Berkshire or whatever. And so the thought of connecting them with a church was not, you know, you'd have brilliant conversations, but there was nowhere to direct them. And I think it's only just occurred to me as we're talking, but we could do better in talking maybe with some of our members who are working in London, various places, about, so if you had a conversation with someone at work, what would you do with it? because you can't invite them to our church because it's 3 hours away from where they live. You know, are you thinking about local things? So I think that's really important. Just expand a little bit.
We've got some people in our church who commute to London, and I think we've begun to realise that our main responsibility is to support them in their evangelism in the place where God has put them. And we're really grateful for London lunchtime ministries that they've been able to plug into. And we see supporting them to support those ministries as the primary way that we're able to encourage them in their evangelistic ministry. We don't benefit from that as a church, but that's where they're most able to be useful to God.
And that's where the partnership of the FIC is helpful in terms of being able to point to other like-minded churches within the network and having that confidence to be able to do so, or the partnership groups that have allowed that these days.
What did you think about this? Because I was thinking, because we don't have these natural networks, what do you think in just a, we've got about a minute or so to go, maybe 2 minutes, the noise we could make and to create evangelistic opportunities that are not based on deep friendships that we're going to find almost impossible to create on a large scale. What did you kind of have in mind?
Well, first, it's worth saying, I think not every community is a commuter community. There are still many communities in Britain which are kind of genuinely local geographical communities, and they require a different approach. Yeah. So the way that you do evangelism has to be very context specific. I think it's how do we reach the people that we won't naturally connect with in our friendships and our relationships? So friendship evangelism only enables you to connect with a particular pool of people. But there are thousands around us who we will never run into in a social or a work context. So how do we go to where they are? It's the biblical equivalent of where is the marketplace where we can meet people and engage with them. And that may well be some presence on the streets in our community. So some churches, it'll be running some kind of stall in a regular market. For others, it might be having some kind of regular sort of public open air preaching. And I think not the hectoring open air preaching, but the opportunity to be able to say something that draws people in and engages with them. Some churches have found a systematic, simply knocking on people's doors, saying, we're the church, how could we help you? Have you heard about us? Just opens up the opportunity to engage with people who would never ever come to church and have no social contacts with the members of the church community. And I think done in a loving and gentle way, those can be effective ways of building contacts that we would never otherwise have.
That's really helpful. We are nearly at the end of our time. If people want to know more about the FIEC and to perhaps read your blog, do you want to give a couple of references for that? For the new website and for your
thanks
own...
so much. We've just launched the brand new FIEC website. We've restructured it, www.fiec.org.uk. And basically what that does is that brings together resources, material for church leaders, but it also provides news of what's happening across the country. There's a whole set of videos called Get to Know, which will basically showcase the work and ministry of FIEC churches in a wide variety of different contexts across the country. And I think they're really encouraging, because they basically speak of how God is at work through local churches. My own blog is www.john-stevens.com. And I write on kind of church issues, cultural issues, current affairs. There's lots there that you could engage with.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for being on with us today. And that was John Stevens from the FIEC.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode, and thank you to John Stevens for joining us for this podcast. We are getting closer and closer to Christmas, but we've still got a few podcasts left for you before we wrap it up for the year. We have one more guest coming up before the end of the year, and that's Krish Kandaya, so make sure you keep an eye out for that podcast. We've got a couple of podcasts about Christmas, one about the Christmas story, thinking about that apologetically, and another thinking about how we should celebrate Christmas. We will also release a podcast about politics and voting in the run-up to the general election here in the UK. Come back next week for another brand new episode of Ordinary.